This presentation will be an overview of three full-length seminars which I've given in my institution. And the synopses of the first of these three were given at the past two ASA conferences, and I don't expect any of you attended them and couldn't remember them if you did. So the first half of my presentation will be a brief review of the model, and then we'll go on to analyze these in terms of various theories. I call this an instrumental model because it is not real and it isn't true. It's like the periodic table in the Dewey Decimal System. They're either useful to you or they're not. And why did I get into this area? Well, these are the kind of questions that some of my students were asking and I was asking. And in teaching, I found that there were never any really good definitions of science. So this started with an attempt to develop a system of a definition of science that worked, and it grew from there. These are the objectives that I'm going to attend to address, to introduce you to the model, to explain some of the differences between the domains, argue that such theories as evolution and climate change are really not scientific theories, they're historical theories, and it was also done to kind of help my students deal with some of their beliefs. In talking about the domains of inquiry, we're going to talk first with definitions about what I call the manipulating activities. These are activities that we all start with as human beings when we're small before we move on to try to understand, and also human society started this way. When we look for artifacts of very early human life, we find tools, we find religious symbols. We know that they lived in communities, so there was some politics involved. These were people attempting to manipulate their environment. But when people become interested in understanding, we then move to the understanding domains. People try to explain what is natural, what has mass. People try to explain what is not natural and does not have mass, and people try to figure out what happened earlier. So with these definitions, this is kind of a summary of the domains of inquiry. Those in blue are science and technology. The red indicates religion and metaphysics, and the green, politics and history. And these go together basically into three domains. The first, the attempt to manipulate and understand that which has mass. The second, to manipulate and understand the supernatural. And the third, to manipulate and understand what happens. So when we take a look at the inquiry process, which is common to all the domains of inquiry, we find that objectives influence the data. Data generation and collection influences it. Analysis influences it. And its ability to predict what's going to happen gives us confidence in it. I've highlighted the ones in red because that's primarily what we're going to talk about today. We're just going to kind of try to accept that personal objectives and domain objectives influence the collection of data, and analysis is something that is common to all of them. We'll just very briefly touch on that. So how do we acquire data when we're dealing with technology and science? Those who write about the philosophy of science will usually state that data acquisition for science is the full disclosure, replicable experiment. Now, replicable is not repeatable. An experiment can be repeatable and not replicable. Let's give an example. Eddington's work on attempting to prove one aspect of Einstein's theory of relativity had to do with watching the sun at an eclipse to see if any large objects near the sun bent the light as it was coming into Earth. That is a repeatable experiment. It's not repeatable at any time. You have to wait for an eclipse of the sun but it is a repeatable and replicable experiment. On the other hand, Leeuwenhoek, when he first began to play with his microscope, scraped the tartar from his teeth, dissolved it in water, and looked at the water through a microscope, and he found a lot of what he called animalcules swimming around in the water. That is a repeatable experiment, but it is not replicable because your diet, if you tried it with your own tartar, is different than his. Your teeth cleaning habits are different from his, and so on. So I would call the first replicable data, the second is more forensic data. That is, we will accept Leeuwenhoek's data. He drew pictures of some of the little animalcules he found in his mouth. But it is not repeatable because we don't have Leeuwenhoek's mouth anymore to analyze. Of course, data for metaphysics, religion, and politics is a little bit different. We get that data from revered texts like the Bible, the Upanishads, the Book of Mormon, Communist Manifesto. Some people have given Aristotle's, Plato's, and Aquinas' writing this kind of reverence that they believe what is in those texts. This is clearly not even an experiment. Data is not replicable or repeatable. It is just given. The data for history is very complex. Any of you who have talked to historians realize how they struggle with primary, secondary, and tertiary sources. One's primary source is another's secondary source. The idea is that we can give more confidence to the primary sources, less confidence to the secondary sources, and even less to the tertiary sources. However, people with access to all the sources will still disagree. Evidence is just go to any court of law and watch a trial. The jury changes and the verdict changes. The data is the same for everybody, but not everybody comes to the same conclusion. So we have less confidence in history because we can't have access to all the same data and we don't have the same confidence in all the same data. So to try to summarize the data acquisition, technology and science collect their data by controlled experiments or repeatable experiments. The repeatable might give different data sometimes, but the replicable keeps cranking out the same data. And I think it's fairly obvious that the systems are simpler, right? It gives us more confidence in the data, makes it easier to replicate it. The religious, metaphysical, political data is a little more iffy. Our own perception will alter the data a little more easily. And the forensic data of history is a guess to start with. It even becomes more complex at a time like this when it's easy to duplicate a document and change a document on a computer screen, so we always have to ask, is this document legitimate? Even, and even if it is legitimate, what about the person who wrote it? What about their biases? So it seems obvious that one of the reasons that science and technology, we're in love with it as much as we are, is that it's more reliable. We're a little more sure of it. The systems are simpler, so they're not going to bomb on us nearly as often. In terms of analysis, this is a full seminar, so I'll only say, not trying to go through all of this, I found that all of these domains of inquiry will use all of these tools of analysis. And my long seminar gives examples for each of the levels of inquiry using these kinds of analyses. So my summary for the analyses is that all domains of inquiry use the same analytical tools. Induction is not the exclusive domain of science and technology. From this, my first couple seminars, I'll kind of summarize my conclusions. One of the conclusions was that there is no scientific method. That, in fact, the methods of inquiry apply to everything. The real difference with science has to do with our level of confidence in the data. Another one of my conclusions was that when we speak about things like issues in science and religion, we're really being unfair to religion. Religion is a manipulating activity. Science is an understanding activity. We should be talking about issues in technology and religion, or issues in science and theology, theology being a subset of metaphysics. When it comes to prediction, science and technology does very well. From the laws of motion, knowledge of gravitational attraction, we can predict the escape velocity for any object that we want to put in orbit around the Earth, and we've been pretty consistent in being able to do that. Some of you who are chemists will remember that Mendeleev predicted that the gaps in the periodic table of the elements would be filled. He was confident enough his data to realize that there was something missing there, and that turned out to be correct. Prediction isn't nearly as much a part of metaphysics and history. When somebody tries to predict history, we call that prophesying, right? Predicting what will happen. And it's a lot iffier, predicting what is going to happen in the area of history than in science and technology. So, to summarize the prediction part, science is usually pretty predictable. The data is usually consistent. Metaphysics, the systems are complicated. Everybody has his own metaphysics, and in history, we're not nearly as certain of the facts. So now we're going to really meant to talk about here. Let's look at the domains of inquiry and some of the disciplines associated with it. Chemistry and physics and astronomy, we have a lot of repeatable experiments. Relatively simple systems, very good record of prediction. Chemical engineering works because the rules hold. If we raise the temperature 10 degrees, the reaction rate doubles, providing we don't start another reaction. No chemical engineer comes to work at a production plant any day and said, well, how's the Arrhenius constant today? What temperature do we need to run it at today? It's consistent. In physics, the same thing. A physicist doesn't come to work and ask if the gravitational constant has changed today. He can predict his systems pretty well. In astronomy, we start to move into a little different area because when we do astronomy, we're really looking at history, aren't we? The light even from the sun left 8 minutes ago. The light from stars could have left hundreds of millions of years ago. So this is forensic data. It's been pretty consistent, so we can predict a lot with astronomy, but we're starting to get moving a little to history at this point. When we get to meteorology, we have developed some very good methods for predicting the tides. And as long as the wind isn't blowing, we know what the level of water is going to be in any body of water connected to the oceans. We can predict that very, very well. When it comes to weather, we start to get a little more iffy. Further away from the current moment we get, the little harder it is to predict. Climate change, I would suggest, is a completely different matter. All of the evidence in climate change is forensic. There are no replicable experiments. That doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to predict, but let's admit that it's a little iffier. Another problem is that the reality is still more complex than the model. There's all kinds of unpredictable events that predict outcomes, and there are some major unpredictable events, such as volcanoes and meteorites crashing into the Earth, that are not part of the model. And we know it's even more complex because the issues have become politicized. But the evidence is forensic, and because there are not repeatable experiments, since we're basically looking at history, this is much more of an historical model than it is a scientific model. When we get to something like evolution, of course, we get into real complexity. My students ask me, do you believe in evolution? And I say, it's a really a complex question. It's like asking me if I'm a physicist, if they believe in the theory of relativity. And they'll say, well, parts of it have been shown to be true, and other parts we really don't sure yet. It encompasses a lot of ideas. For example, if you tend to be a uniformitarian, there will be arguments among biologists as to which is most important, the survival of the fittest or the survival of the luckiest. Hasn't been completely worked out yet. If you tend to be a catastrophist, you're going to ask, well, just how important is punctuated equilibrium? And the answer is, we really don't know. We don't know if all of those mechanisms work. In terms of the origin of life, there are evolutionists who believe that all the forces that originated life are natural, and the others that believe there are forces outside the natural. Anything from morphogenetic fields to a being called God that impressed themselves. And when we come to the origin of man, we even have more problems. And notice that these theories are based on forensic evidence. They're really not scientific theories. They're historical theories. That doesn't mean we shouldn't look at them. But we're looking at history. And in evolution, we are complex enough that we're really not a whole lot of people that are trying to predict what's going to happen in evolution. Right? We come to biology, back to a slightly simpler system. A lot of the early work in biology was classification. So it was a lot of forensic evidence. There weren't what we call experiments going on. And these helped develop a language where we can start to talk about logic. Of course, these systems for classification are metaphysical. They're somewhat technical because we describe colors, we describe function and those sort of things. Biology has become more scientific as we have developed cell biology as replicable experiments expand. In behavioral biology, we start to have problems because the experiment is repeatable, but the data is not replicable. A very, very simple problem has to do with rats in mazes. Once the rat has known the maze, it's a different rat, isn't it? Can't do the same experiment with the same rat, and yet the different rat will have a different history than the rat that just ran the maze. So the experiment is repeatable, but the data is not replicable. And, of course, in social studies, rats aren't the only people that have a history. We have a history of well. We have tendencies that derive from our environment, probably our genetics. Experiments on human beings can be repeated, but they are not replicable because the experiment has changed both the experimented upon and the experimenter. And of course, when we get to things like music, philosophy, and theology, we are getting into metaphysics. These are abstract disciplines. Metaphysics is rewarding. We probably never think deeper in general or deeper about ourselves than when we are dealing with metaphysics. And when we get into things that, if we have not become directly involved with them, we know people who have. For example, when somebody thinks they need to turn their life around, whether they jump into a 12-step program or join a church or start finding a counselor to confess their faults to, we're dealing with metaphysics, aren't we? You can't do experiments on those sort of things. And, of course, when we get to anthropology, we get to studying the history of ourselves. It encompasses all of the domains. How does one analyze and understand a 2,000-year-old culture? That is difficult because people in that culture have some metaphysical differences from us. They have some different data sets. They hold different assumptions from all the domains of inquiry than we do. And how to understand an ancient civilization from our own 21st century? It's difficult. We seek data through our own mindset. That's kind of anthropology 101, isn't it? I think it really demeans anthropology to call it a science. It's far more complex than that, far more complex than a science. So what are we? Well, we can say it in a lot of ways what we are, but we are basically, I suggest, metaphysical creatures. We are not scientific creatures. Is it our mass that defines us more than our ideas? When I talk to my students about these sort of things and ask them these kind of questions, I end up by asking them a question. I say, okay, there's somebody that really means a lot to you. What do you want to hear from that person? Do you want them to say, when I'm in your presence, my endorphin levels rise? Or do you want to hear, I love you? You know, they all want to hear, I love you. And I say, why? It's such an imprecise word. It means a thousand different things. In the English language, we have only one word for it. At least the Greeks had three words for it. Why wouldn't you rather know the scientific impact about being in the presence of someone you care about? And it doesn't make any difference. They still prefer, I love you. Thank you very much. I don't know. I guess I'd like to talk with you more about that further. The typical question, I guess, is what about photons? What about gravity waves? And I say, well, that's a manifestation of matter. So, and if you believe Einstein's equation, energy is matter too, so that takes care of the...
Yeah, but it's not mass. So we
yeah, mass and its emanations. But I... Okay. Okay. If weather isn't more prophesiable than climate change?
Oh, yeah.
I would say so, yeah.
So I just wondered
if I was trying to say that. Oh, okay.
Any other questions? Let me ask if I can start something off the computer because we're doing a direct swap from PC to Mac.